3, 2, 1. Welcome to a Beta Talk, which is a renewable podcast. We've got a very interesting episode for you today. Firstly, I'd like to thank my sponsors for season 2, which has come to an end, which was MCS certified. And we're now in our interim period before I sort of go into season 3. But I've got a fantastic episode for you today. It's the first one I'm doing. It's not the first one I'm doing over Zoom, but it's the first one where I'll upload the video file as well for you to maybe look at as well. So I'm going to introduce you to my guests. I've got Lee Fisher, who's an engineer I know. Lee's up in Lincoln. Very, very good engineer if you're up that way. He's a gas engineer, but he obviously knows a little bits and pieces about renewables as well. I'm going to introduce you to Richard, who I've had on the show before. Richard's involved in policy, and he's the Energy UK Research Centre. Have I got that right, Richard?
The UK Energy Research Centre.
Good. And also, we've got Jan Rose now. Have I got that right, Jan? Did I mention that right?
Jan Rosenau, yeah.
Rosenau, and you're also involved in policy, and the acronym is RAP, which is and you're the European Director of the Regulatory Assistance Project. Now, I'm going to bring you in first, because you and Richard have just wrote some bit of, or you've just wrote a paper on something, so let's talk about that. So, Jan, what have you written?
Sure. Thanks, Nathan. So we asked the question, what's the opportunity that we have to decarbonize heating in the next 5 to 10 years? And we very quickly came down to agreeing that it's going to be some combination of energy efficiency, but also electrification. And we asked the question in the paper, how can we do this in a way that actually benefits, the energy system, consumers, and also the planet by reducing carbon? So that's the question we asked, and that kind of drove the research that we've done in the report.
Now, have you and Richard worked on reports before? Was this the first collaboration you did both together?
Indeed, it was. We haven't worked before this report. We met at a conference, I think, in 2018, organized by the National Infrastructure Commission on heat. So that's where we first met, and I followed Richard's work ever since.
Because Richard, I've interviewed before. You did quite an interesting thesis. I don't know if you've actually read that, Lee, but you'd enjoy that. But what was your thesis about, Richard?
Interesting. Thanks very much, Nathan. So my thesis looked at lobbying and how recent policies developed about sustainable and low carbon heating in the UK. The relationship that Jan and I have developed has been great, and we've really got similar interests, and we have. I guess we have professional relations as well. I think it will be the start of a very positive relationship. I mean, it's been great so far. And the report that we worked on, I think because both of us have done the things that we sort of said in the report ourselves. Yeah. And we both got to know each other better through speaking about how our systems are working and what we were planning. And then it was only really November last year when we started working on this report, which was published in March. And we actually, we're doing a seminar, an online seminar on it, which will be on, it's a Thursday coming. And we've got over 600 people signed up. It seems to have been really popular, and I think it will be the start of hopefully many reports, and we've already spoken about doing lots more research work together, so it's great.
How do people find that seminar if they want to?
So the link is on the RAP website, I think, Jan, but also we've both shared it on Twitter. I think Nathan, you might have retweeted it earlier as well, so we can retweet it again. I'm not sure whether it will be recorded because we're doing it live.
Yeah.
But we can check on that.
Well, hopefully if I get this recording out, I can actually then put the link on the description of the podcast. Now, what was the main findings of your sort of report that you did, or what were the sort of conclusions you come to?
So if I may answer that question, Nathan, one argument that's sometimes being made when people consider installing a heat pump is that we simply can't scale this up because the power system won't be able to cope. I'm sure you've heard those arguments before. There would be issues with the local network and significant peaking problems. So the main finding from our work was that actually heat pumps can be quite flexible if you allow them to do that, and if you schedule them in a smart way, rather than just fit and forget. And that's what both Richard and I have done. So we actually don't run our heating system pretty much between 4 and 7 in the evening. And you know, that delivers significant cost savings, but also, of course, reduces the peak. You know, when you actually look at our consumption, it's really low between 4 and 7 o'clock in the evening.
Are you both on Agile Terrace, Octopus Energy? Are you both on it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring in Lee, because obviously Lee is a good friend of mine and a good engineer. And obviously you're very much involved with gas mainly, aren't you, Lee? Now,
indeed.
From an engineer's perspective, what do you think are the main hurdles for this sort of the mass of electrification of heat, really?
God, the chasm's huge. How long have we got, Nathan? yeah, I mean, I think, Rich, on yours, you've gone for air source, haven't you? And then underfloor heating. One of the big issues why you actually invited me on this tonight, something I mentioned the other day, it's like just looking at the, you know, performance of the building as a whole and that side of things and, you know, trying to get a grip. It's kind of, you've really got to try and break this down, which I've, you know, I've glanced over the report and breaking it down into steps we can actually implement now. You know, trying to look at the whole building as a thermal mass and heating that if we can, but, you know, silly things, even if right now we're still fitting gas boilers, well, let's look at the emitters. Let's make sure the flooring's right to store heat. Let's put underfloor heating, or let's design it as low temp. Even if it is a gas boiler on the wall today, well, maybe in 5 or 10 years, if the emitters are right and the pipeworks are all right, then it's just to kind of, you know, pick those baby steps we could do today for the, you know, when we get the rest of the pieces of the puzzle sorted.
I'm just taking notes on that, Lee, because that's really interesting. It's always research time for me. Is there anything you think, so for new build, I think, you know, there's loads of progress you can make now. And I think it wouldn't be that difficult to ban gas boilers from new build. And you know, that's what the government's saying they're going to do in 2025. You know, fitting a heat pump to a new build is not that difficult. And the clever bit of the heat pump is now in the controller. So you sort of put it in and it can be, a lot of it can be optimized online, and you can sort of do lots of fault testing online. But in terms of existing heating systems, if you're going to someone's house, say do maybe boiler replacement or some sort of servicing or maybe upgrading a radiator, is there anything that you think you can go into that house and do at the same time that will make it better prepared for a low temp heating system?
God, there's loads we could do. I think, I genuinely think, and you know, it's great to have you guys on board with this, but one of the first things we really need is research. You won't believe simple questions like, you know, how do I set my programming? Should I have it on low all day? Do I have it at this times at night? And just simple things like that. It is so hard, whether you're Hound Energy Savings Trust or any of these bodies, to get simple answers. So heating engineers don't know. And I desperately try to know and try and find actual research what's been done in people's houses, and it's atrocious. So a simple thing, obviously there is the type of control on the wall, but how to set the times to best perform in an average house, because the only answers you get is, oh, houses are all different. Oh, well, that's great, isn't it? Well, just give me an house. I live in a 3-bed 1930s built semi, bare fronted. Thousands and thousands of those around the country. Give me that as an example, and I can then work it out down to a small flat or upwards. New build, I think there's so many things we could do, like overnight, just for, you know, just a simple switching policy. Like you said, design the emitters so the high temp. Say that whatever heat, you know, and take the gas argument out of this, whatever heat source you're putting in has to be within a certain percentage of the requirement of the building. So we're not putting a 40 kilowatt boiler in a building which needs 5 kilowatts, you know. And also make sure whatever the heat source is capable of ramping down to a certain level. Is another thing that just doesn't happen. You know, again, if we said what, if you maxed out at the maximum, but also said it had to ramp down to say 10% of the peak load, that this technology is out there, but it's just not regulated at the minute. And so it's a way we could easily get to grips with the wastage right now.
Yeah, energy, and we're going to pick up on that. Energy wastage is something some of us, we talk about a lot, don't we? I know Rob Berridge is a big sort of proponent of this word, and we are wasting energy like you wouldn't believe. And he's also very, very much interested, as we all are, is one of the first things you can do in any home, whether you're retrofitting or the new build, is actually just work out the calculations. How much heat does it need? And then you've got a good starting point. And we don't tend to do that in the heating industry. And unfortunately, the heating industry has been a little bit lack in pushing that little simple process. You know, it hasn't really pushed it onto us. You know, we used to do it back in the day. I'm not saying that everyone back in the day was a greater engineer, not at all. But as our industry grew, and it did grow very, very quickly, it's something that got lost in the ether somewhere. You know, just that simple calculation. Once you've got that calculation, and like Lee's saying, you know, we can build new houses. You know, let's scrap high temp emitters and emitter systems and design them to be low temp. So even if a gas bore is going in like a year later, it can be swapped over quite effectively. But yeah, if we start actually calculating homes right from the word go, that's a good start anyway. Jan, what is the main sort of role you do at the RAP is the acronym I'm going to use again because it's easier to say.
We say RAP as well. It also sounds a lot better, doesn't it? Regulatory Assistance Project. Now, the name actually, to explain where that comes from, it was three former regulators in the United States who thought, you know, we should train the next generation of regulators and maybe have a two-year project, and got some funding for it. That was in 92, so a long time ago. And the project just continued, and now we're going for 28 years. So we're still providing that same guidance to what is called regulators in the United States. We probably would more talk about policymakers in the UK. You know, people like policymakers in BASE, for example. I know you had a whole episode with Richard, I think, where you asked him the question, you know, what is a policymaker? And he gave a pretty interesting answer to that. We essentially advise people who craft, design, and implement policy. That's in essence what we're about. And we don't do that from a sort of purely academic perspective, but we look at what works elsewhere in the world. You know, what works well in the US, what works well in India and China, where we have offices, what works well in other European countries. And then we take those examples and present them to policymakers to pick, you know, the best practices really to implement in a given location. So that really is what we are about. And my role is to direct a team of 14 people to do that work in Europe. And we all scattered across United Kingdom, but also the European Union.
So you've mentioned other countries. I mean, is there a country that stands out that seems to be getting it right? I don't know. Did you hear that, Jan?
Sorry, Nathan. My volume just dropped to zero. Can you say that again?
Yeah. So you mentioned other countries. Is there another country that seems to you to be getting this right, or is doing things a little bit quicker and better maybe than the rest of us?
So obviously, interesting is Sweden to look at when we talk about heat pumps, because they have, I think, the largest penetration. Or Finland, I think they install the largest number of heat pumps per person per year. But they also have a very unique situation. You know, in Sweden, you have a lot of low carbon electricity, a lot of hydro, which is very different to places that have a gas grid like the UK. But we can learn a lot, I think, from Sweden. And actually, Richard's employer, the UK Energy Research Centre, they did some work, I think, a few years back and looked at Sweden and why they moved so fast on heat pumps. And the main lesson there, I think, was that actually, you know, using heating oil and gas in Sweden is simply not competitive, because the taxes are so much higher on fossil fuels than on the clean electricity. And that's, of course, the reverse in the UK. We pay a lot more tax and levies for electricity than we put on heating oil and gas. And that distorts, you know, the economic signals that the consumer is getting. And who can blame someone who's making a decision about a heating system? If you want to go for the most cheapest option, you probably have got to install a gas boiler in the UK, unless you go into the octopus tariff like Richard and I have, and then you save some money. But most people won't even know what that is.
I think what you're saying there about the energy prices is huge. I said it the other day again on Twitter, where so roughly £30 a month averaged over the year is my space heating cost for this 3-bed semi. You know, if I spent 11 grand on a renewable system, then it's a 30-year payback, and that's if the energy is free. If I could literally spend £11,000 now, it'd take 30 years to get that back. And again, it's because of this downward pressure on energy prices as much as anything. I'm not advocating at all with treble gas prices, because there are people who genuinely struggle. to pay that level of energy. But again, we're then back to that's because of how bad their systems are, how poorly insulated the houses are and the whole housing stock as a whole. But how are we doing for time, Nathan?
I'm
kidding, mate. I'm kidding.
I was gonna ask you, because obviously you've got a customer base. Now, are they asking questions? Are they asking about renewable energy when you get asked for quotes, for instance?
Yeah, you know, I think we've all appreciated there's been a bit of a shift over the last couple of years, particularly. People are more and more interested in it. But unfortunately, it still comes down to economics. It has to add up. I had a customer, you know, a couple big house was looking at designing a system for, and he really wanted to go solar. Really wanted to go solar PV or solar thermal to heat his water. But he just said the numbers just couldn't add up. He bought a huge house. You know, it had a 43 kilowatt heat requirement. It was huge. But when he was looking at, I need to spend this on the windows, this on that, it's a finite pot of money, as it is for anyone. And he just couldn't justify putting solar on because it just wasn't worth it for the money reason. And it's sad, you know. And this is quite a passionate guy who really wanted it.
So how do we solve these issues, do you think, Richard? Like inspiring, inspiring consumers that there is an option for them? I mean, it's a hard one, don't get me wrong. This is a very, very big problem. Is it changed the mindset of our consumer base, which is a very diverse consumer base. And obviously some have access to money, some people don't have access to money. I mean, what sort of, did your report sort of focus on this at all, about what we could do with the consumer?
I think, so in terms of the report, the key takeaway for, you know, the industry really is that this needs to be packaged up by someone. So if you do get a heat pump, and if you do the energy efficiency, and if you use a time of use tariff, you can get these really significant carbon, so you can get, you know, carbon reduction wins, but you can also get minimal costs. So as Jan and I've both said, we've done this, and we're now paying basically less per unit of heat than we would be for gas in terms of our bills. But there was still that big upfront cost of the heat pump in the first place. I was fairly savvy in that I got a non-MCS registered heating engineer to install it, and it was through this umbrella scheme. Mm-hmm. It wasn't easy, but it saved me some money. But still, I fundamentally think heat pumps are too expensive, and you know, we've got this really small market for heat pumps in the UK, and they should be less. There's just not enough competition, and they can be cheaper because they're actually fundamentally quite basic bits of kit. They're just big fridges. We all know that. So we need to get heat pumps cheaper as well, and we need to sort of grow the market. And in terms of the consumer side, unfortunately, you know, it's like electric vehicles and solar. So you might have people asking you for a solar installation. Solar's got that sort of bling factor. It's got that shiny electronic, it's always referred to in the policy world as having a sort of sexy feel. And it's the same with, you know, electric vehicles and Teslas and stuff. Heating doesn't have that. You know, people don't even appreciate a lot of the time that heating is this particularly unsustainable thing that we do. So I don't, there's probably some sort of natural learning to go on. But at the same time, I think regulation has got to be in there. And as difficult as it might be, this balancing out the fact that, you know, gas is higher carbon than electricity, or certainly using a heat pump is a lot more sustainable. You know, there's probably got to be some sort of pricing measure introduced at some point, in the same way that we have, you know, we've increased car tax for the most polluting vehicles. You've probably got to do a lot of stuff together. So I don't know if that answers the question, Nathan, but basically there's lots to do, and there's lots of different fronts where battles need to be fought.
And who's going to help us most with this, do you think? Or who should be helping us most with this? I mean, does it always come down to government, or is there things us installers should be doing?
Well, I mean, the government's been saying for since 2006 that we need to have loads and loads of heat pumps. And they put the RHI in place, and that came in, you know, 4 years late, maybe. And it's been underperforming for all of those years. So, yeah, I think a lot of this responsibility does sit with the government. They're fundamentally the people that, you know, drive how infrastructure changes and, you know, how these big sort of structures change in the world. I don't want to say blame, but so some of the blame of why we haven't done much in the past few years does sit with them. And if you look at the announcements that have come out today about what the policy is, the new policy will be for low carbon heating in the future. It's fine, but it doesn't, no, it doesn't increase the level of heat pumps. It's just sort of maintaining the market where it is now, which is, you know, miles away from where we need to be.
Mm. Yeah, miles. I mean, Lee, what, as an engineer, is there something we can be doing?
Well, something I was going to just say, following up on Mitch's, but I mean, you'll have to forgive me, gents, but my pinned tweet at the minute on Twitter is an air source pump I took out and put a boiler in. And it's one of the things, as these policies, a gas boiler, these policies are implemented, it's getting that control and making sure things are installed right. I mean, that one in particular, it was a house with lots of microbar copper paperwork running around it, and the air source never worked, lots of problems. 10 years later of getting it repaired and repaired and repaired, got it ripped out, because he still didn't want to rip up his very expensive tiled flooring and destroy his house to repipe it. Fair enough. You know, you can understand somebody not wanting to tear the house apart. So that was that example, but this goes back, that was an RHI, he might still be getting payment, actually. Might have to remove the address. but the problem with that is that the installers were allowed to just stick an air source pump on an unsuitable system. And that feeds into the culture and the demand and people hearing, oh, so-and-so down the street had his took out. It's rubbish. But a lot of engineers have that perspective. My own experience of air source heat pumps is they don't particularly work well, because I only come across them not working when I'm coming across, you know, changing two-part valves. And it's all for this very reason. They've been stuck on houses that should have never been put on because there was good grants available.
That was this heat pump, isn't it, Lee?
That's the one. That's the one, yeah. And that was the condition it was in when I got to the job.
So. Yeah, but I remember seeing it, and I think that was a Husky heat pump?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've gone bust. Because I was really interested, because this company emerged when the RHI sort of first started going for domestic, and it suddenly became this thing, and I thought, that sounds too good to be true. And they're saying, you know, going to be cheaper than gas. I'm thinking, well, that's a really good thing. And I think they were made in Liverpool, or they were made somewhere like that. Somewhere, was it Liverpool way, I think? I think they were based.
I think it might be in Yorkshire, but yeah, it was up there.
Oh, okay. You just Google that one company and you hear these horror stories about Husky heat pumps. And then you follow the trail in terms of the company's house stuff. And they had like directors who were registered to run 300 companies and stuff like that. And it was a really terrible company, but somehow they got through all of the checks that allowed them to become MCS accredited. And it's staggering that, you know, after however many years that heat pump was in, I think the elements were rotting out of it from the inside, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, there's problems with the wet side of the installation, which I won't go into, but the actual pump outside, it kept breaking down. It was poor quality. It was a cheap import, rebranded as Husky or whatever name was on it. And the homeowner actually got to the point he tried as hard as he could to get spares for it. And that was, because obviously the impellers had actually gone, as you can see by that picture. And that was the final thing. But that's just a simple thing of quality control. Mm. And that's an issue we have right now in gas boilers, which can be so cheap. Now you can spend £400 on a gas boiler right now. It's not going to be very good. It's not going to ramp down very low. It's not going to be compatible with fancy controls. But they're out there, and again, it's just one of the many pieces of the puzzle, isn't it? It's just
I mean, that's been a major success in Sweden. I think that they had the same problems, I think, in the 80s when consumer confidence in the products was really low. There were lots of problems, poor performance, this kinds of things that you described, Lee, the wrong technology in the wrong house. And they set up, I think, a consumer council where you could go as someone who had bought a product that didn't perform. And over time, they ironed out the kind of cowboys in the industry and made sure that there were good training standards, that were adhered to across the entire industry. And I think now confidence is very high in heating technology in Sweden, which I think comes down to actually the government setting up this consumer council ultimately and having really high quality standards. And that's the sort of thing I'd like to see more of in the UK. You know, good examples that, old buildings of different types actually working well. It's a difficult one because the UK is the oldest housing stock in Europe. We often forget that, that we have a very difficult housing stock. I grew up in Germany and we have a lot of houses that have been built after the war. And, they're much more efficient, a lot easier to install these heating systems. Mm. But in the UK, most people live in really old houses. It's just a completely different situation.
Yes, it's a very important point. We've got this very diverse old housing stock, and we've got one of the most diverse populations on the planet. And, you know, it's the people that live in these homes are very important as well. You know, an important factor about, you know, in implementing this sort of this new sort of technology. Because there's, you know, I grew up in, something's come up on my Zoom. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to press the cross.
Oh, we've been upgraded. And
so I grew up in East Anglia and lots of oil. And my dad was, you know, a lot of his customers, I mean, he's 76 at the moment. And I mean, a lot of his customers are way older than him. And, you know, they still have open fires. You know, they live in a very different sort of world to what are, I don't know, mainstream journalists or whoever actually thinks something we all live. I mean, they do really live in a different world. And it's going to be hard implementing this technology into homes like that, for instance. You know, as much as there's passionate people like myself about renewable technology, how do you change the mindset of some, you know, an old couple that are in their 90s that are quite happy with their little back boiler, a coal fired back boiler? I mean, it's a conundrum. We've talked about training. So someone, I think Jan mentioned training about in Sweden. Now, Lee and I would know that the training issue in the UK isn't quite right. I'm well known for talking about training in the UK and our training regimes. I don't think they're fit for purpose. I don't think anyone's to blame, but I definitely don't think they're fit for purpose. I think there needs to be a whole paradigm shift of how we train people. And unfortunately, the structures I see that are kind of involved with training seem to still have the old models. They can't come away from the old model. And I often say, you know, qualifications doesn't mean competence. You know, we're teaching people to be qualified. We're not training them to be competent. And there's a big difference. So there needs to be a major shift in how we train engineers. You know, there's fantastic engineers like Lee, you know, who are prepared for that. And as Lee will tell you, you know, we're all learning off of social media. There's a lot of peer learning going on, and no one's actually sort of capturing that really and formalising that. And that's something that should be done within training. I mean, did your report, Richard, actually touch on training issues at all?
No, we didn't really look at training, actually. We looked at sort of an international perspective in terms of how you can fit electrification as a big thing into, you know, national energy systems. So we didn't look specifically at training. I think it does vary significantly between countries. And I was having a chat again via Twitter at the weekend about, you know, the regime or the system that the French use for heating controls. And someone said that someone that used to actually be in charge of the renewable heat incentive policy was saying that when he lived in France, his oil heating system a decade ago had full weather compensation. It was fully automated and had no thermostats. And I mean, that is so far away from where we are. And there's just so many different standards between different countries that I don't think there's one thing you can say about training. And, you know, look at how actually builders like are sort of governed in Germany. You know, you have this federation of master builders, and to be in charge of a job, you have to be a fully, you know, a sort of accredited builder. In the UK, that just isn't the case. And, you know, you don't need to have any qualifications necessarily to do any of this stuff.
I mean, Lee, I think you made the tweet this. I don't know if I should. I'm trying to think of my off-gym rules here, but
be careful.
You made the tweet, possibly the biggest, largest boiler company on the planet, how their Twitter header banner has gas boilers on their UK Twitter feed, but in France it has air source heat.
Oh, that wasn't me actually. So you're not implicating me, but no, yes, there was a large manufacturer. Yeah, and it was just that difference from the UK page. Had a gas boiler as its look at our product, and yeah, the fringe page was the.
It's interesting. It's to that manufacturer, and am I allowed to name them, Nathan? Because I've spoken to them before.
I'm a Valen installer, so I can name Valen. They're a wonderful company.
They are a good company.
And they make very good air source heat pumps as well. They're a big manufacturer of air source heat pumps. But when I spoke to someone from Valen, they said that if the UK market were to switch to air source heat pumps, they could literally have a manufacturing line within 2 weeks set up to build air source heat pumps in the UK. Yep. It is possible. And you know, none of this is sort of, it's not rocket science, putting a heat pump in a house. I'm not surprised that they have a gas boiler because they sell a lot more gas boilers in the UK. But in France, you know, gas heating isn't as big a thing and they have more people on electric heating. So And that probably shouldn't surprise us too much.
Yeah, we actually found the same in our work in Poland, which is, you know, Poland is even worse because they have mainly coal heating. Yes, really inefficient coal heating and really polluting, really bad air quality. And you know, I went to talk at the annual gathering of the Heat Pump Association, and there were 600 people, and a lot of the people from industry, they were coal boiler manufacturers. And I was astounded and asked them why they showed up at that gathering. But they said, you know, we see the market is changing and we actually have the skills to install a new product. And, you know, we actually want to make an investment in this area and train people up and develop a new skill set. And I was really astounded by how agile these companies can be, you know, once they see that there's a clear direction of travel. And I think that's what we're lacking in the UK right now. It's not clear what is the direction of travel. We have, you know, piecemeal approach to this whole topic.
You're right. I mean, like we've just mentioned, Valiant. So Valiant are very, I mean, I know a lot of people in Valiant, a great company, some great people. All the boiler manufacturers in the UK have some great people, and they are hedging their bets. You can't blame them, you know, you can't blame them, I suppose. I mean, there are some, as we know, and I'm not going to mention it, but they are going down the hydrogen route. That's the sort of game plan they're betting on. But I mean, they're quite capable of switching as well. It's just about sort of maybe encouraging them, nudging, I think, is the new word of this decade, nudging them along the right lines. But I don't know how that's going to go. But, well, it looks like we've got our 40 minutes. So that went quite quick. And I only get 40 minutes, apparently, on this Zoom package that I have. So I think we'll revisit this topic again, obviously. And, you know, Rich is a usual guest. I've had Lee on before. Jan, it's very, very nice to have you. And I'm sure we're going to do plenty more as well. We're all going to look nice on YouTube when I upload it, because obviously I'm well known for my podcast that's just audio, so no one actually ever sees me. Next time I'm going to get a bookcase like Lee.
it's all in the staging.
So thank you ever so much, gentlemen, for joining me. Stay safe, because this is during lockdown, and have a good evening, and it's nice to see you all.
Cheers. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Yeah.